Chapter 6, A Date with Destiny. As the train stopped in Ludhiana in the very late hours of the night, Dr. Edith Mary Brown descended to the platform. From this base, her influence was going to affect countless millions of lives in the Punjab, throughout India, and into neighboring countries. As she descended from the train, Dr. Brown was truly keeping a date with destiny. On the platform, the penetrating coldness of the Punjab winter hit her. This was not what one expected in India. At home, the impression had been given that India was a land of never-ending heat. Miss Pogson soon affirmed the fact that, though Ludhiana appeared cold in November, by May it would be one of the hottest areas in India, with a temperature of 120 degrees in the shade. Two other missionaries had come to welcome the new arrival. One was Rose M. Greenfield from Scotland, who had first arrived in Ludhiana in 1875 and was now in charge of the Zenana mission. The other was Miss Andrews from England. She had been in India about 20 years. She was treasurer of the Zenana mission, as well as devoting much time to evangelistic work. The lives of these three women were to be interwoven by forces which at one point would be dynamically constructive, but which at another point would become bitterly antagonistic. The women drove from the station to their mission bungalow in an open phaeton. As they passed through the winding streets of the bazaar area, Miss Brown noticed the characteristic night sounds and sights of the Indian town. Here and there, people would be asleep on charpoy or string beds outside their tiny business establishments. From behind bamboo mats, which served as barriers for privacy, people could be heard moving and mumbling in their sleep. Occasionally, a glowing fire of wood could be seen with two or three people huddled around it, shawls drawn up over their heads for a little warmth. On arriving at the bungalow, the new doctor was greeted by the other members of the staff, Miss Anderson, Miss Fox, and Miss Reuter. Later, in the quietness of her own room, Edith Brown pondered the words which she had read in Daily Light that morning. I will lead them in paths they have not known. I will make darkness light before them. She felt that these beautiful words were meaningful for her as she started into a new life and new work. Surely these words spoke of a special leading from God, and were they not already reinforced by the guidance which had brought her to this place? Ludhiana had been one of the largest and busiest cities in the Punjab, land of five rivers, for many years. It was a center for a group of ambitious and industrious people, such as most Punjabi people are. To this area came the first missionary, the Reverend J.C. Lowry of the American Presbyterian Mission in 1834. His mission survived various crises in government and made a vital contribution to the life of the community and province, as well as to the entire Christian church. In 1858, an invitation went from this group in Ludhiana to Christians throughout the world to engage in prayer as a united body during the second week of January 1860, seeking an outpouring of the Holy Spirit upon the Church Universal. This was the beginning of what was become known as the Universal Week of Prayer. Later, a young Sikh boy came to the mission school in Ludhiana from a nearby village to receive part of his education. There he received further instruction, which led him into Christian life against the opposition of his family and friends, even with the threat of death. That young man became known throughout the whole of India and in many foreign countries as Sadhu Sundar Singh. In this setting, in 1874, Rose Greenfield came to undertake work among the women and children. This was the beginning of the Ludhiana Zenana Mission, which was operated by the Society for Promoting Female Education in the East. She was assisted by the Pogson sisters and by a number of other women teachers and evangelists as the work developed. Her work at first was directed mainly toward teaching the women and organizing schools for the children, but she could not escape for long the misery and physical suffering which existed among those with whom she was working. She began a crusade of prescribing cleanliness and simple remedies. Soon many women were looking to her for medical help and guidance, so she determined to do all in her power to help alleviate some of this suffering. On May 4, 1881, a room was rented and a regular dispensary started. About this time, Miss Greenfield's sister Kay, who was a nursing sister in London, wrote that she was coming out to do all that she could to help. The work became so popular among the women of the town that it soon was necessary to establish a small hospital. In 1888, Miss Greenfield was able to negotiate with the Presbyterian Mission for the use of a small church which they had outgrown and were no longer using. There is one large ward with 10 beds and 6 smaller wards, 2 rooms for matron and nurses, 2 cookhouses, 1 consulting room, a courtyard, and a covered veranda, she wrote. Her brother, W.S. Greenfield of Edinburgh, provided the funds for the renovation and remodeling of the building. It was named the Charlotte Hospital in honor of his wife. In this hospital, in 1889, the Ludhiana School of Nursing was initiated under the supervision of Sister Kay Greenfield. Here, Edith Brown now found herself as the first qualified medical doctor on the staff. Her time was to be divided between hospital and dispensary in the mornings and language study in the afternoons. No language school was available, so the services of a munshi teacher had to be secured. This created another difficulty, as no munshi could be found who knew English. Emily Pogson sat in for part of the lesson, giving the meaning of the words while the teacher acted out the meaning of the sentences. It was a slow procedure for one who was a keen student and fast learner. For some time, Miss Brown was privileged to have her language lessons from one of the Presbyterian missionaries who was an outstanding Urdu scholar, and she took writing instructions from the munshi. In the late afternoons, Miss Pogson would join her for a daily walk and would give help in sentence construction, new vocabulary, and so on. These were happy occasions for Miss Brown. She wrote, "I enjoy these walks very much. It is just sunset, and each evening the lights have been lovely. The country is very flat with only a few sandhills, and there are many tall, graceful grasses and reeds, about 12 feet high, and they stand out beautifully against the sunset sky. We meet such strange sights and people, sometimes pilgrims and other groups of people in all kinds of costumes, and each is followed by a cloud of dust, sometimes a small caravan with perhaps a dozen camels, or a flock of goats, sometimes buffaloes." The daily trip down to the hospital was a period of color, anxiety, and excitement. Going through the bazaar and the streets, Dr. Brown and Miss Pogson noticed how the population largely seemed to live on the streets and to perform even their most intimate toiletry there. There were no pavements, and everything seemed to be disorganized. Charpoy were along the sides of the road, with people resting on them or sitting on them combing their long braids of hair. Men as well as women did this, for the Sikh man wore long hair rolled up into a tamna and tied with a ribbon. The charpoy also served as counters and tables. Business was conducted on them. Food was placed on them. Conferences gathered around them. Almost any other item of furniture was dispensable from the domestic and social life of the family, but not the charpoy or bed. Dr. Brown's medical ministry in Ludhiana began quickly and moved forward with gathering momentum. The hospital was not large, having a total capacity of 32 patients, but she found it far more comfortably arranged than the hospital she had seen in Delhi. Miss Pogson had one table for dispensing the medicine, while Dr. Brown had another for interviewing the patients. She also had a dark corner and lamp for examining eyes. One of the first eye patients took fright and fled at the sight of the ophthalmoscope and lamp. No one could catch her to persuade her to return. Dr. Brown remembered with humor the first patient in Ludhiana, from whom she received a fee. It was for 20 rupees, and she recorded that it was from her Choketi patient, This was a Portuguese Indian woman whose husband was station master. She told the missionaries proudly that she talked English. Among her many symptoms, she listed a choketty feeling in her stomach, neuralgia in the half head, and she kept describing the feeling in the upper and lower part of her trunk. It took considerable self-control for Dr. Brown and Miss Pogson to refrain from open laughter at these comic comments. A good many of the early patients came with various types of eye trouble, but a large number came when their eyes were in hopeless condition. Hoping for great things from the Bahree Dr. Miss Edith, they went away sad when told nothing could be done for them. Another frequent patient was the dental case. These women she handled with amazing success, mainly because of her gentleness in dealing with them. One case gave her a great deal of satisfaction. A village woman came into the dispensary with a very bad-looking face. An abscess had broken through her cheek, and for about 7 months it had not healed. Miss Brown extracted the offending tooth and touched the sinus with caustic, and a few days later the patient returned with her face perfectly healed. The people were so used to having their teeth knocked out or removed in a very rough manner that it was a source of much amazement when an extraction hurt so little under the hands of this doctor. An important case was brought to her in June 1892. A farmer and his wife came from a nearby village, bringing their 17-year-old daughter, Jato, with them. The father said, "Dr. Miss Sahib, our daughter is sick. It is harvest time and we must be at work in the fields, so we cannot stay here. But we could not bear to see the girl suffering any longer, and we have brought her to you. Please take her and do anything you can for her. We will come back after the harvest and see whether she is alive." One look at the girl was sufficient to show that she was suffering greatly. Her abdomen was so distended that she could not sit down. When Dr. Brown had completed her examination, her diagnosis was a large ovarian cyst. Nothing but an operation could save the patient. But how could abdominal surgery be performed under such conditions? There was no operating theater. No one knew how to give chloroform. No one had seen abdominal surgery before. Still, it was the only hope for the patient's life, and permission had been given by the parents to do all that was necessary to ease their daughter's suffering. "Why, I can give chloroform," said Emily Pogson. "That's easy, just a matter of only giving drop by drop on a piece of lint. I'll do that, but," she shuddered, "I won't see the operation." She dreaded seeing the deep incision. Next morning, Dr. Brown superintended the preparations for the surgery. A steam kettle containing carbolic lotion was started to spray across the table. This was done in those days of antisepsis to prevent infection of the wound. An elderly Bible woman was called in to stand by in case the girls were not strong enough to lift the patient. Two other girls were told to hold a clean towel above the chest of the patient so that Miss Pogson, sitting at her head, would be unable to see what was happening on the other side. The doctor could look over the towel at the patient and tell Miss Pogson whether to give more or less chloroform. The operation began. When the first incision was made and the intestines came into view, the Bible woman was horrified. She began to wring her hands, moaning all the while, "Hai, Bahadur Miss Sahib! Hai, Bahadur Miss Sahib! Oh, the lion-hearted Miss Sahib!" The doctor concentrated on the surgery, ignoring the commotion from the onlooker. After some time, the operation was over, the incision closed, and all was well. The case was not ended, however, for it was the custom in those days to keep the patient flat for 21 days until the danger was considered over. Miss Brown moved her bedding to the hospital so that she could sleep near the patient and give careful supervision. What a time of rejoicing it was on the 22nd day when the patient was allowed to sit up for the first time. And even happier was the day when her parents returned to the hospital and rejoiced to see the girl walking around and looking well. The news of this operation spread around the countryside and established the doctor's fame as one who could heal and perform miracles with the knife. There were other noteworthy events. One Sunday, when she was sitting quietly in church, there was a commotion at the door. Soon one of the ushers came and whispered that she was wanted at the door. Outside stood the gawala, the Brahmin cowherd, very agitated. He explained that the cow had had a calf, and the whole uterus had turned inside out. They did not know what to do. The sacred cow must not be allowed to suffer, and she should not be permitted to die. The doctor, Miss Sahib, must come down and do something about it. Dr. Brown went down to where the cow was quartered and tackled the problem. She impressed them all with the importance of the occasion, washed up and dressed as for a big operation, and then managed to get everything back into place. There was great rejoicing, and the doctor's stature immediately increased in the community, for she had saved the life of a sacred cow.